murderers, decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, hello, and welcome back to Decoding the Crime Verse. My name is Danny, and I'm joined with...
Yuri.
That's correct. And today, we take you back to one of the most shocking and consequential criminal cases in American history. The Chicago Tylenol murders. Ever heard of them?
No.
No, me neither. I didn't hear about them until this. But anyway, this case, which began in 1982... not only claimed the lives, but also reshaped the way we think about product safety, consumer trust, and corporate responsibility.
Okay, so wait, this is not a drug operation or something?
No.
Oh,
it's okay. Murders, but you'll see how.
All right.
Okay, anyway.
Let's get into it.
So over the show, we will take a deep dive into the full story of this chilling crime, the investigation that followed, and the long-term impact it had on society and the industry. So, the incident. Let's see what happened. So, it was started on the October 29th, 1982, in the Chicago metropolitan area. Seven people suddenly and mysteriously died after taking extra strength Tylenol capsules. Think Tylenol is like a pain med?
Yeah, it is a pain med.
The victims ranged from 12 to 35. Among them was a 12-year-old girl named Mary Killerman and three members of the Janice family who had unknowingly shared a bottle of poisoned pills.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Panic.
So it's not an overdose?
No. So that's like you taking a Nurofen and dropping dead.
Hey.
Yeah. You would see why panic like would spread.
Things
rapid.
Like this will make me not want to take meds anymore. It's like,
yeah, you see, guys, I don't trust the medical industry.
Yeah.
Glory knows all too well about. I think it's a big scam. But I will not say this on air.
That's a discussion for another time.
That's a discussion for another day. Panic quickly set in as authorities and medical professionals realized these deaths were not coincidental. After investigation, it was discovered that the Tylenol capsules had been laced with potassium cyanide, a deadly poison.
Okay.
Do you know you find cyanide in apple seeds?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Which I find interesting because I think we might have mentioned this in our show before, but like, I remember eating like apple seeds and stuff like that. So
you're trying to kill
the fact
yourself.
That I haven't
Although,
died.
I feel like you would need to eat a truckload of apple seeds.
For real?
Yeah, I think it's very like the concentrate in the apple seeds not enough to kill you. You'd have to like.
Not me picturing myself gathering a whole bunch of apple.
Please don't. Let's not do that. Putting them in a blender.
You know.
Wow. Oh my goodness! Listen to him. Listen. Do you hear this?
Mass operation.
Let's just leave it there. Further examination showed that the tampering had not occurred at the manufacturer's facility, but rather in stores. So that wasn't happening at the factory. It was happening in the shops. So once
kind of makes sense.
It's not like the company. It's happening on the company's watch. These are it's like going. So are we in South Africa?
Yeah, so it's to the retailers, right?
The retailers. So we in South Africa have a pharmacy called Dis-Chem. It's once the pill bottle is in Dis-Chem, someone is tampering with it.
Yeah.
So that's very scary.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's very scary. Someone had taken bottles off the shelves, opened them, inserted cyanide into the capsules, and returned them for unsuspecting consumers to purchase. This realization turned the public health crisis into a full-scale criminal investigation. Okay, the randomness of the attacks heightened fear. Unlike typical cases of poisonings or murder, there was no clear pattern, no single store, no single neighborhood, no specific demographic was targeted. This was unpredictable crime and it made it terrifying. That is terrifying because you don't know if the bottle you are buying is the one that's been laced or not.
Yeah, but I also find it interesting. Do they have like zero control over what's going on with their medication? Because obviously
no,
that's a serious
so
thing.
What I would think, because you cannot sit in the store with a bottle open on the floor injecting cyanide. Someone's going to catch you. Me, for my opinion, I would think they would probably maybe steal some bottles, take them home, inject them, bring them back and put them back on the shelf. No, I think it could be a staff member or it could be a person. I mean, if you slipped, remember, this is the 1980s. It's not like today.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. There is a lot less security.
There was a lot less security. So, like, for example, if I walked into a store and I slipped a bottle of pills into my pocket, took it home, injected it, next day I bring it back, put it back on the shelf.
Because for some reason I'm picturing like a bunch of teenagers playing pranks on people.
Well, this is a very deadly prank.
Next thing, oopsie.
Anyway, once the connection was made, authorities moved swiftly. Johnson & Johnson, the maker of Tylenol, faced an unprecedented crisis. In an act of corporate responsibility that was later praised, the company issued a nationwide recall. So, like, we're going to pull the drugs back in. Don't take them.
Yeah.
We're pulling them all in. Pulling over nearly 31 million bottles off the shelves, which cost them over $100 million. So they lost a lot of money because of this. They also issued warnings, worked closely with law enforcement, and established a hotline to assist concerned consumers. The company's response became a case study in effective crisis management and corporate ethics. The public was terrified. People rushed to dispose of their Tylenol products, and sales of capsules across brands plummeted. Meanwhile, investigators from the FBI, the Chicago Police Department, and the Food and Drug Administration worked tirelessly to find the culprit. Nationwide pharmacies and grocery stores pulled Tylenol from their shelves, and hospitals reported an influx of people fearing they had been poisoned. Now, you see, that's also the thing. People will take something, they're not actually being poisoned, but their brains will think they've been poisoned. And now you've also got this influx of people. Despite one of the largest manhunts in U.S. history, the person responsible for these poisonings has never been, till today, 40 years later. We still don't know.
I mean, I don't think that would be an easy case to handle.
It's not, because like we said, it is at random stores, random. How do you track that?
You can't.
How do you track that? You can't. Okay. Investigators followed thousands of leads, interviewed countless individuals, and tested numerous theories, but no conclusive evidence pointed to a single suspect. One of the most infamous leads involves James William Lewis, who was a man who sent a letter to Johnson & Johnson demanding a $1 million demand to stop the killings. While he was convicted of extortion and served prison time, authorities were never able to link him directly to the poisonings. Other suspects emerged over the years, including disgruntled employees and individuals with criminal backgrounds, but none were definitely tied to the crime. Now, you see, this is why I don't think it would be an employee of the pharmacies. It's not one pharmacy.
Fair enough.
So how does that, you don't have access to all the pharmacies. Yeah. Do you get what I'm saying? If you work at the Dis-Chem in, I don't know, down the road from my house, you don't have access to the Dis-Chem in Cape Town. Do you get what I'm saying? Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
So I don't think it would be an employee of the pharmacy necessarily. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Maybe it was a truck driver.
Oh, wow.
No, it's a good thing. They could be to have a delivery of Tylenol in their back of their truck. They could stop somewhere, inject random bottles with poison, and then deliver different bottles to different pharmacies.
Or maybe they just got exposed to, I don't know, harmful gas somehow.
But it during was injected transportation. Into them.
Oh, so were there like holes? Is there evidence for like holes in the...
I don't know, it doesn't say, but they have used the word injection.
Okay.
I'd have to look what a Tylenol... Do you think a Tylenol one's like, you know, those fish egg tablets? Or do you think it's like a...
I think it's like a regular tablet.
Or like a capsule.
I think it's a regular tablet.
Like, I don't know. We don't have Tylenol in South Africa. I wouldn't know. I don't take Tylenol. So anyway, the investigation was hampered by the fact that in 1982, forensic technology was not advanced. There was no surveillance cameras in the stores, and DNA analysis was still in infancy. While modern forensic science could potentially solve the case today, the trail has gone cold after 4 decades. You know, this makes sense. When I go to my pharmacy and you buy drugs, that thing's flipping put in a cage with a lock on. And then you have to have it unlocked at the till. it's so dramatic. Like, it's a whole, like, my medicine is locked in a cage with a lock.
I don't know why. Whenever we like walk with that medication, I feel like we're being watched.
I feel like you are being watched, especially if it's like a level 5 prescription.
Yeah.
Anyway, the psychological impact of Chicago Tylenol murders was enormous. This wasn't just a case of criminal targeting an individual. This was an indiscriminate act of terror that could affect anyone anywhere.
Yeah.
The sheer randomness of the crime led to widespread paranoia, and parents hesitated to give medicine to their children, and the concept of product tampering became a concern. Because now if they could do it to Tylenol, they can do it to the bag of sweets at the grocery store.
Yeah, definitely.
They can do it to anything. So beyond fear, the case fundamentally changed consumer behavior. Americans became more skeptical of over-the-counter medications and demanded assurance of product safety. The events of 1982 altered consumer trust in pharmaceutical companies and retailers forever.
Yeah.
Now, while the perpetrator was never found, the Chicago Tylenol murders had a profound impact on public safety. The most significant outcome was the introduction of the tamper-evident packaging. That sounds interesting. Before 1982, many over-the-counter medications were sold in bottles that could easily be opened and released. After the crisis, manufacturers adopted foil seals, plastic bands, or tamper-proof lids, features that are now standard for consumer safety. That makes sense. Like, you know, like on a pill bottle, it's got that, like, you like the, like, it's a click thing. Like, when you open it, you like click it open.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? So you can see if that bottle has been tampered with, because you can see if it's been opened. It's the same thing if you go to the shop and you buy an ice cream. You've also got that little thing you've got to click to open it. A seal. So you can tell if a product has been tampered. So this must have where it came from. It came from here.
Yeah.
Because beforehand they just had lids. And now we don't even realize that this was the reason. Now we just think it's normal. Additionally, this case led to the Tylenol Bill, which was a federal law passed in 1983 that made tampering with consumer products a federal crime, punishable with a life sentence. Yo, imagine. These charges drastically reduced the likelihood of a similar event occurring. Despite these safety measures, copycat incidents did follow. In the years after the Tylenol murders, several other cases of product tampering were reported in the US, including poisoned painkillers and contaminated food products. These incidents promoted further advancements in packaging security, including the widespread adoption of blister packs, individual pill packaging. Oh, that also makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, because you get your pills and they're in the whole metal thing, and then you've got to pop one out individually.
Yeah.
That makes also... Who knew these all had a reason, and it's so that you and I are not being poisoned?
Yeah.
Today, we really think twice about the child-proof caps, sealed packaging, or safety seals, but they are direct consequences of this terrifying event. In addition to changes in packaging, the case was also revolutionized corporate crisis management. Johnson & Johnson's swift and transparent response became a gold standard for handling emergencies. Today, public relations experts and business leaders still study the company's approach as a prime example of how ethical leadership can maintain consumer trust even in the face of disaster. Okay, and even though decades have passed, the case remains open. Advances in technology, including DNA analysis and digital crime databases, continue to offer hope that the perpetrator may one day be identified. Periodically, law enforcement officials revisit the case, re-examining old evidence with modern techniques. In recent years, investigators have explored new leads and re-interviewed witnesses. Some believe that with the rise of new forensic tools, a break in the case could still happen. Until then, the mystery remains unsolved, leaving open one of the most haunting questions in American criminal history. Who committed the Chicago Tylenol murders? 40 years ago, it's not too long ago to still find the person, unless the person was 80 at the time. Then he would be dead. But, like, if he was 40, he'd be 80 now. I mean, he could very well also be dead. I mean, there's no guarantee. So there is a chance, but again, I feel like because it was so random, how do you track who the person was? I don't think you can be able to.
I think so.
This is one that will stay unsolved. I don't think you'll be able. Although, you know what also interests me is they never continued. They just stopped.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? Normally, like, serial killers and psychopaths don't stop until they're caught or they're dead or they're in jail. This is definitely one of those brain scratcher ones where you're like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Although I'm very interested to learn. That's why our medicine and that has all the protection seals and stuff. That's very interesting to know. It's a little scary also to know. So please, next time when you open up your medicine, make sure the seals are still intact.
Yeah.
Please, ladies and gentlemen, we don't need this repeat happening. Anyway, do you have any last thoughts you would like to add?
Just be careful what medication you take.
Yeah.
Also, make sure you look at the reputation of the pharmacy if you're getting your if you're not getting your medification. Oh my gosh.
Medification.
Obviously, I made an error here. Let's,
next time he wants a pull, I'm going to say, do you want medification?
let's keep this civil here. Oh, so, obviously, funny. I made a mistake there, but what I'm saying, if you're getting a medification. I think this is stuck with me now. If you're getting medication and it's not legally through a pharmacy.
Yeah, please don't do that, guys. You please don't know what you're taking.
Because in South Africa, we have people that now make their own products and sell it with a branding.
Side eye. You want to die? Early death? Take medication from people who don't know what they're doing. Let me just say that. Anyway, that is the Chicago Tylenol murders. We hope you enjoyed. Otherwise, we will see you same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.
We're about to take it back.
This is Radio On Demand. What you want, when you want it. It's Active FM. Active FM, Radio On Demand, the Netflix of radio. Radio has never been better.
Active FM, radio has never been better.